Clip there from Banastrand, the first movement in the Casement Sonata, which is a new sonic installation and ambient poem created by Gavin Friday in collaboration with the poet James McCabe. And as you may have picked up from those lyrics, it's an homage to Roger Casement, a man that James and Gavin describe as the most elusive and contentious figure behind the Easter Rising. Gavin Friday is with me now. That's quite a statement to make about that man. How elusive is he?
He, to me, what I find very attractive about the man is he is this sort of defiant outsider. As a young kid, I'm old enough to remember before nationalism became a dirty word with the Troubles. I remember going to the 50th anniversary of the Rising.
In 1966?
Yeah, as a little boy. And, you know, Casement, he was there, but he was never really there. It was more the Pierce and the Connollys and you know, the stations were called after these big guys. And he was a road in Northside Dublin, Dublin 11, Casement Park. Now, I know there are other things, and they didn't bring back the body till 65, but he was always this sort of outsider that was, like, different. He was also sort of a sir. He was part of the dignified sort of British. He worked for the British Empire.
And the story that you tell throughout, it's across five different sections, really. And we start with Bannerstrand, which is that moment in The Rising. What does that moment tell us about where Roger Kismet was on the eve of the Easter Rising, 1916?
He was in prison. He was in blackness. There's an extraordinary book called The Dream of the Celt, written by a South American man called Mario Vargas Llosa. And, you know, this man spent a lot of time in Peru as well as Congo. This book, it starts in blackness. I mean, Bannerstrand was Good Friday, they arrested him. Somebody leaked that he was coming in a U-19 submarine. And if you see the images of it, it looks like four metal bins with a load of 20,000 arms. He convinced the Germans to give him. He knew how to smuggle guns because the Belgian Empire and the Brits smuggled arms into Peru and Congo for other reasons. So he became a volunteer and brought in these arms. Bannerstrand was the moment where he realised, OK, game over for me, Good Friday. The Rising on the Sunday, or the Easter Monday, he didn't know. He was arrested. And in the book, The Dream of the Celt, it opens in blackness. And he didn't know until his trial started. Did the Rising happen? He didn't know. He didn't know that they executed the leaders of the Rising in Dublin. And he didn't know that they exposed his black diaries all over the press, the Times. He didn't know all of this until he got out for the trial. So, I mean, the man was in limbo. And we take that on, this sort of debt-pending limbo when he hits Bannerstrand. And then we go into flashback to Congo and Peru.
So the way then that yourself, Gavin, and poet James McCabe approach this, James, did he set you out, would give you the set of lyrics and then you work the music into it? How did the collaboration actually play out?
It was a strange thing in that myself and James have been working together. I mean, James is based in Munich, in Germany. And he, for some coincidence, he went to the same school. He's from the same area as me. And he contacted me about 2-3 years ago, throwing different projects at me. And we're developing a few different projects, like one for theatre, some soundtrack stuff. We're even talking about little novels. So it was this working relationship. During last year, something in me went, I want to do something for the centenary of the Rising. I think it more, I'd have to ask the Fanon O'Hanover, which is my baptismal name, why. But I wanted, and I wasn't engaging with what was going down here. I was running away from O Roshi the Vahawalia, running away fast. And I wanted to pick something. And when I heard that people like the Hugh Lane and were taking Casement, and I went, that's the guy, and I'd become quite enamoured with him. So I threw that idea out there, and myself and James sort of ping-ponged. It's sort of writing would happen, then I would add, he would take, and then we'd go in and write and record. So we were making it up as we were going along.
You said there that, you know, that one of the things that you don't, we start on Bannerstrand and then you go into, you know, flashback, if you like. And you look back at the life of Casement as very much, you know, a stalwart of the British Empire initially. Yes. He was a knight, in fact, wasn't
he? He was a knight and a sir. And it was when he went there, I mean, he did not know what he was going to experience.
Particularly in the Congo you're talking about.
Congo
now.
And Peru. I mean, the narrative really goes there. But this man basically set the train tracks for Amnesty International, you know, and was like printing these reports worldwide. And I don't think they were too happy. I think them knighting him and embracing him was almost like, come in, shut up, come in. And then he turned around and he says, well, there's no way around this. empire is evil, and look what they're doing to my own hometown, my own country. And that's where he went, goodbye, and he became an Irish volunteer.
I want to listen to a section from the Congo part of the sonata. What was the sort of the overall emotion in forming this, if you like?
I think the exoticness, because, like, I mean, you know, an Irishman, even though he's a very learned and travelled Irishman, going to the Congo, like, alone. But it also stirred up certain things. It stirred up his sexuality, where he was a repressed homosexual, and then became an active homosexual with certain men in the Congo. So we're dabbling in a few things here.
Section there from the Congo movement within the Casement Sonata that Gavin Friday and poet James McCabe have. I suppose it's an installation that you've made for the Hugh Lane Gallery. What exactly will we see and hear if we go to the gallery, Gavin?
Well, you'll hear the whole piece, which is 58 minutes long. You will see certain graphics that I've put up and visual imagery, worked with the photographer Barry McCall. And I worked with a graphics guy called Redman, a.k.a. I wanted the piece to be quite meditative, so it's seated, so you can see. But I painted the whole room blue. One of the last words the man wrote in his diaries was, it's one of the quotes. We took a lot of the quotes from his diaries. Death is not dark, only a deeper blue. And we took that and we made the room, we started visually to make it blue. And then we had sort of various images taking on the mosquito and the butterfly, the sort of the vampire empire, the mosquito, the bloodsucker, and then the beauty, the trapped beauty of the butterfly. So it's playing, but almost like touchstones to open up. Really, this is a movie for the head, but there's no visuals.
Having got to the end of the project and all of that you've described to us there, what did you say the baptismal name was again? Fionnán.
Well, in Gaelgugus.
So, Fionnán O'Hanvaha.
O'Hanvaha.
So, is Fionnán O'Hanvaha Is he any happier? Do you think he understands Casement any better now than he did earlier on in his life? And does Gavin Freddy understand him better after this?
Absolutely. He nearly killed me. I nearly ended up in the Congo. The opening line of the whole piece is, "I am Roger Casement." So I reached into not only the musician and the sound composer, but also the actor in me. So I went there, and a lot of the way we performed it, I wanted it quite sort of spontaneous. So they were like live takes in theatre when we were recording it, rather than take two of the vocal. So, yes, I think I wore his suit for a few months, yes.
Gavin Friday there talking to me about the Casement Sonata, and you can you can see and hear, experience that Casement Sonata at Dublin City Gallery, the Hugh Lane. It starts at 12 p.m. and 3 p.m. Tuesdays through until Sunday, and it's there until the 21st of August, and that will include the anniversary of Roger Casement's execution, which is the 3rd of August. HughLane.ie is the web.
Sort of cracking up laughing. I think Bono said yes.
When we were in Dublin in the late 70s, there was massive unemployment.
Must become aware of the essentially new features,
you know, the
which distinguish a free society as the definite negation of the established society. And we must begin formulating these features, no matter how metaphysical, no matter how utopian, I even say no matter how ridiculous, we may appear to the normal people in all camps on the right.
Freiheit, Revolution. Richtet euch auf für den Menschen. Freie Revolution ist der Beginn gegen die moralische Auflösung. Befreiung marschiert. Befreiung marschiert. Freie Revolution für ein freies Europa.
Velkommen til. Du lytter til programserien I mit Aarhus Hus med Jan Høgh Strikker. Det her det er det femte program i serien, og det er på en måde en kopi af i hvert fald noget af forrige episode, da vi skal lytte til mange af de samme kunstnere, nemlig dem, som optrådte på Organ Sound Art Festival. For programmet det bliver en lille tidsmaskine, der transporteres lidt over en måned tilbage i tiden til 16., 17. og 18. december i 2021 i Koncertkirken for at genopleve festivalens koncerter. Egentlig så skulle festivalen have løbet til og med 19. december, men den her uomgængelige pandemi den begyndte at røre på sig i sådan en grad, at der fra klokken 07 om morgenen søndag den 19. december ikke måtte laves flere koncerter i DK, i hvad der så har vist sig at blive til en halvanden måned lang periode. Det sidste stykke musik, som blev spillet ikke alene på festivalen, men også i Koncertkirken i 2021, og for publikums vedkommende nok også det sidste stykke opførte musik, som de fik lov til at høre i rigtig længe, det er det, vi starter med her. Vi skriver 3. februar 2022 i det øjeblik, jeg speaker den her episode, og jeg har stadigvæk ikke hørt musik opført siden. Men det er ikke kun derfor, at den tyske komponist Eva Maria Haubens stykke det klinger videre i mig. Det gør det, fordi det var usædvanligt rørende. Stykket det hedder Abhanden, Meditation sur la Orgue Trois. Det har også en engelsk titel, Lost Meditations for Organ 3. Tabte meditationer for orgel 3. Og stykket det er altså skrevet i efteråret 2021, og det handler indirekte om isolationen, pandemien og den her state of mind, som du kan blive hensat i. Og for det ikke skal være løgn, så var det faktisk en uopførsel af stykket, så det er lidt som om, at Haubens havde skrevet stykket til netop den her aften, før vi lukkede ned for det sociale igen. Abhanden er et ældre tysk ord, som Haubens fortalte mig. Det henviser til den tyske romantiske digter Friedrich Rückerts tekst, som komponisten Gustav Mahler har sat musik til, der hedder Ich bin der Welt abhanden gekommen. I am lost to the world. Og som handler om en kunstner, der fortrækker sig fra den fysiske verden for at leve et indre liv. Ich bin der Welt abhanden gekommen, mit der ich sonst viele Zeit verdorben. Sie hat so lange nichts von mir vernommen, sie mag wohl glauben, ich sei gestorben. Es ist mir auch gar nichts daran gelegen, ob sie mich für gestorben hält. Ich kann auch gar nichts sagen dagegen, denn wirklich bin ich gestorben der Welt. Ich bin gestorben dem Weltgetümmel und ruh in einem stillen Gebiet. Ich leb allein in meinem Himmel, in meinem Lieben, in meinem Lied. Vi glider her fra Eva Maria Hauben til Michael Mørkholts systematiseret automatmusik med den her undertitel, der hedder Elektroakustisk kompositionsprincip for treklang og polyrytmik i ren stemning. Og det blev opført på åbningsaftenen fra et lille rumskibslignende setup midt på gulvet i koncertkirken med fire højtalere med hver sin kanal vendende ud mod publikum. Michaels værk det er skrevet til festivalen og det her lille positiv orgel, og værket indeholder desuden også et computerprogram, som er skrevet. Aftens store koncert det var nemlig med Anna von Hauswolf, og det var sandsynligvis hende, som havde solgt billetterne ud, men det, der er så rart ved at lave festival, det er, at så kan man tilføje musik, som publikum ikke vidste, at de skulle høre. For eksempel systematiseret automatmusik. Thank you.
Nu skal vi tale om orgler, som er et instrument, som allerede romerne brugte. Det har mere end 2.000 år på banen. Og bare man siger orgel, så får de fleste nok et billede af en masse store orgler i en kæmpe stor kirke, og lyden af de meget smukke, brusende toner, der får en salme til at hæve sig til skyerne. Men orgler kan lyde på mange, mange andre måder. For det er næsten altid i kirken og til salmen, at vi er i nærkontakt med orglet. Og der er måske nogen, der har tænkt, om ikke orglet kunne få en ny lyd. Det kan det, for det kan for eksempel lyde sådan her. Det her kan man høre live i aften, for svenske Anna von Hauswolf er en del af Organ Sound Art Festival, der klinger rundt på Nørrebro i København fra i dag og ugen ud. Og mere til i studiet, der er Jan Høgh Strikker. Velkommen til dig, Jan.
Tusind tak.
Kunstnerisk leder af den her Orgel Festival. Nu skal vi så have pustet lidt støv af orgelpiberne. Kan orgel være ungt? Fordi det her, det er i hvert fald eksperimenterende, ikke?
Altså, jeg vil sige, det kan i hvert fald godt være ung på den måde, at vi har en udsolgt koncert i aften. Det er, nu får du sagt det, rundt omkring på Nørrebro. Det er i Koncertkirken på Blågårdsplads.
Okay.
Og den fuldstændig udsolgt koncert til blandt andet Anna von Hauswolf og et par andre.
Så kæmpe interesse.
Altså, det vil jeg ikke sige, det er jo stadigvæk en nichefestival, et par hundrede mennesker allerhøjest, ikke? Men der er en grundlæggende, er der sådan en second wind, jeg ved ikke, hvordan man oversætter, en bølge af interesse for orgel. Blandt yngre komponister. En stor nysgerrighed for orgelinstrumentet blandt yngre komponister. Og jeg har et hav af kassettebånd og LP'er derhjemme, som er udkommet de sidste par år, hvor folk spiller orgelinstrumentet.
Kassettebånd, det siger næsten alt om det, at de her virkelig lydfreaks, der er interesseret for det. Men jeg tænker på, at det tager også meget godt ind i tiden. Man snakker om ASMR. Der er folk, der dyrker det, når de skal sove. De her hører hvid støj, eller de hører sådan smaskelyde tæt på. Og alt det her, så det her, det er jo sådan, tapper også ind i den der tradition. Det skal være lidt meditativt, ikke?
Det gør det måske på en måde. Altså, der er mange, der gør det her med at spille droner, langstrakte toner og blive i orglets klang. Men det er ikke det eneste, der sker på festivalen. Der er også noget, der, lad os sige det,
som
det
kommer heldigvis til
der udfordrer ørene på en helt anden måde, som jeg kan sige er ikke meditativt.
Nej, okay.
Men det her, det er jo lidt på en måde, meget. Vi får lov til at høre orglet, der trækker vejret.
Ja. Altså, orglet har jo traditionelt... nu bliver jeg lidt nørdet. Det var dig, der var det før, Jesper, med kildbådene. Men altså, romerne brugte det jo som sådan et lille... Man kunne have det i hjemmet til underholdningsmusik, til dansemusik og sådan noget. Det var ikke nogen religiøse overtoner overhovedet. Så blev det jo kirkens instrument rigtig meget, og man tænker uha, salmer og koraler og dit og dat. Men de der franskmænd i slutningen af 1800-tallet, det var jo også bare, fordi det klang godt og lød godt. Det var ikke, fordi det skulle være religiøs musik som sådan, men bare fordi, wow, kan man lave sådan nogle lyde. Hvor står orgelmusikken i dag, moderne orgelmusik?
Altså, sådan som du opridser det, det er jo rigtig nok, man kan næsten ikke slippe for det her kristne vel. Altså, og det er jo også, at alle orglerne er i de kristne kirker, de fleste orgler i hvert fald. Mm. Så jeg tror, at det er en lille smule svært at slippe det. Og jeg tror, der er mange, der arbejder, ikke nødvendigvis med det kristne, men med det sakrale eller det spirituelle, når de bruger orglet. Mm. Det vil sige...
Det her stykke hedder noget med Sacro Bosco, den hellige skov. Så der er også noget hellighed her, selv i det moderne.
Det er der. Altså, i Anna von Hauswolfs musik, synes jeg, at på en eller anden måde, der er noget meget religiøst og spirituelt. Hun arbejder også meget med sådan det gotiske og det sådan lidt dystre også, ikke? Så jeg tror, man bruger det også, når kunstnere bevæger sig ind i kirkerummet, så vil de jo ikke fuldstændig afskrive sig den her stemning, de vil prøve at arbejde med den. Så det kan godt være, det ikke er religiøst i den forstand, men det spiller alligevel på nogle af de følelser.
Og orglet her, det bliver jo så også udnyttet på alle mulige måder, ikke?
Ja, det gør det. Og det gjorde det også under vores festival, blandt andet af guitaristen Mark Solborg og pianisten Simon Toldam. Og det her værk, som Mark Solborg har skrevet til festivalen under titlen Babel. En titel, som selvsagt refererer til den her gammeltestamentlige historie om Babelstårnet, hvor menneskene byggede et tårn, der skulle nå op til himlen, men blev straffet af den vrede Gud der forvirrede menneskenes sprog og gjorde dem ude af stand til at kommunikere. I det musikalske værk, der tager det sig konkret ud i forsøget på at få orgel, flygel og guitar til at tale sammen. Og det skal ikke forstås sådan, at orgel har en eller anden særstatus som et vanskeligt instrument at kommunikere med. Men det kan være svært at balancere instrumenter imod orglets mange lydkilder, piberne og så den her distinkte og associationstunge lyd. Og det er derfor i parentes bemærket, at messingblæsere, måske også træblæsere, ofte går så nemt sammen med orgel, fordi det producerer lyd og klinger lidt på samme måde. Et uddrag af Babel her, hvor orgel, flygel og guitar forsøger at tale samme sprog fra, hvad jeg husker som en virkelig, virkelig god koncert under sidste års festival. Thank you.